Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're listening. I'm Dan Turchin, CEO of PeopleRain and host of AI and the Future of Work. We bring you weekly digestible insights from leaders who are defining the future of work. If you enjoy the podcast, and I hope you do, register for our newsletter at peoplerain.io/podcast. That's people, REIGN.io/podcast. You get bonus content and some additional insights from our guests. We are recording this on May 13th, 2020. Unlike any time in the past, I feel the need to date tag these episodes because, as Lenin famously said, there are decades when nothing happens and there are weeks when decades happen. And I think we'd all agree these all seem to be decade weeks. The world of work is starting to reopen. Our spirits are starting to lift. The death toll continues to be incomprehensible, but I'd say we're spending more time thinking about life on the other side. For many businesses like restaurants and, say, ride-hailing companies, the quarantine has really been devastating. But there are others like, let's say, General Mills, that made us all believe it's now acceptable to eat cereal for dinner, just so that there are fewer dishes to wash. And then there are companies like Zoom, who all of a sudden made it cool to introduce your team to your dog. These are boom times for them. The other tech necessity for many of us during the quarantine is Slack, the wildly popular messaging app. Me and my team have stopped using email. Slack is our file system. It is our scrapbook. It is our ticketing tool. It is our DevOps console. And today we're joined by one of the leaders at Slack, whose teams are building the product that we can't live without. Few people on the planet can take as much credit for defining the future of work. I think it's fair to say that Alan Leinwand has this Silicon Valley Midas touch. He's a serial CTO, investor, advisor, entrepreneur, board member. Alan and I worked together at ServiceNow, where he was CTO during the early hypergrowth years. In a former life, he was the CTO at social gaming company Zynga, and he's currently the Senior Vice President of Engineering at the aforementioned Slack. Alan, welcome to the podcast. Why don't you share with our listeners a little bit more about your background?
Thanks for having me. It's great to see you and talk to you again. It's been an amazing career. I like to think I've been pretty lucky along the way. So I'll tell you a little bit about my background, and then we can sort of go from there. Started my career. Well, first of all, go back to University of Colorado at Boulder, graduated from there, started my career at HP in the early days of the internet, sort of browser days and building up these TCP/IP networks. Fortunate enough to go over to Cisco Systems in the early days when the whole company could fit into one floor of one building. Spent about 6.5 years at Cisco. Went off to a company called Digital Island, where I was CTO. And that was a startup where we built both data centers and content delivery networks. That was through the dot-com bust and boom and bust, I should say. Did a stint at a couple CEO roles, a couple startups that were venture funded, and then found my way over to being a venture capitalist. So I was a VC for about 7 years, where I was both an operating partner for JP Morgan and then a venture partner at a VC firm called Panorama Capital. Along the way, I founded a company, open source company called Viata, which is an open source networking company. As you mentioned, I was CTO at infrastructure at Zynga, a CTO over at ServiceNow. I'm now helping lead engineering over at Slack. And along the way, I've taught at Berkeley, written a few books, all that good stuff. So I like to say I'm a infrastructure guy that grew into software, and I've done everything from enterprise, guts of infrastructure and guts of enterprise software, all the way up to consumer sort of stuff. So it's been a pretty wild ride.
Alan, how has your role, your day-to-day role, changed over the last 90 days? We certainly all know that the pace of innovation at Slack hasn't slowed down.
Yeah, I mean, the past 90 days and since the shelter in place and what we've all decided to do, you know, sort of go into this quarantine mode, things have changed in a couple pretty profound ways. First of all, we're missing that human-to-human contact. You know, we're all two-dimensional creatures in Zoom these days, or two-dimensional creatures on screens. And I think that's changed a lot. I think also the way that our teams are finding the need to communicate is changed. We're finding ourselves as leaders having to be far more transparent. We're finding ourselves as leaders having to be far more communicative, because we can't do those quick little hallway chats or those quick little elevator rides or those quick little coffee talks. So we're trying to do a lot of AMAs every week. We're trying to have town halls as a company. We have short bursts of company meetings where Stuart and the team, we get on there and talk for 15, 20, 30 minutes at least once a week or once every other week. So we're finding that while we're isolated, we're also trying to be more transparent. And while we're being more transparent, we're letting a lot of the team see who we are. I think that that's an effective use of our time. I think in terms of Slack itself, you know, you can read about in the press, we've grown, you know, number of simultaneous users. We've grown message activity. We are growing at a pretty good clip these days. And it's our job within engineering to make sure that we continue the innovation pace, continue the uptime and availability and reliability of Slack, and at the same time, continue the innovation where people can't gather around a whiteboard all the time, where they can't have those impromptu bursts of energy where they're all working together or across the table. So we've thought a lot about how do we make that become reality and how do we continue the momentum here at Slack, because we really do feel like we are helping power collaboration for, you know, tens of thousands of companies or more. I think our last number was well north of that we publicly disclosed. And just we feel the weight of that, and we also feel it's super important for just everyone to keep working and keep doing their thing and being able to talk over Slack.
Now, your CEO, who you mentioned, Stuart Butterfield, has now famously said, we were built for this. A lot of the world is very anxious right now and not feeling like they were built for this. What does that mean culturally at Slack?
I think that means that we feel that using Slack or a tool like it to collaborate, to getting out of email, as you described you're doing in your company, Dan, is just the next wave of collaboration. You know, the idea that we have to have these different views of work where everyone's view is their own inbox is something that we think needs to change. And we think that having this channel-based communication, this channel-based collaboration, where there's a central view that everyone can see the activity, that everyone can participate on, that we can disseminate information quickly to large groups of people at once, really is the way things are going to be in the future. So I think when Stuart says we were built for this, I think he's trying to describe that this paradigm shift, this need to work remote and this need to have this layer of transparency, this layer of collaboration in channels is something we've been advocating for, something we believe and we know makes teams more productive. And, you know, here we are.
Alan, you've led teams that have created some of the world's most iconic, most loved, most used products, going back to even further, but certainly back to Zynga, ServiceNow, now Slack. What product that you are, and your teams have built are you most proud?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think there's a lot of products that I'm proud of. Obviously, back to my days at Cisco and routing and things that we've seen in building the internet itself and building, like you said, the infrastructure for gaming at Zynga, and obviously the collaboration tools we're doing here at Slack and the workflow we had at ServiceNow have all been really interesting. But I don't necessarily think, when I think about being proud about something, I think about the product. What I actually like to think about is building great teams. You know, it's great teams can produce great products, and great teams often do produce great products. But the converse is also true. Bad teams rarely produce good products. So I think that what I'm most proud of in my career is really being able to build great teams and also being good enough of a leader that people want to follow me from company to company. I've been fortunate to have folks come along with me as I've gone through my journey and my career, or I'll see people that are, you know, customers of one company, and then I'll move and they'll be excited about that product and want to move to that product as well. So I think the thing that I'm most proud of is building those great teams, building that cadre of folks that have always liked to work together, that trust each other, and then building those products that we see multiple iterations of people wanting to buy and use.
Any specific examples of any kind of maybe young leaders that you've cultivated or anyone where you look at who now has gone on to do other great things that you'd say, you know, you're proud to have had an impact on them?
It's funny. I think a lot about that. There's every now and then, Dan, you've probably run into these people, and I do too, but you'll have a meeting with somebody. It'll be some young mind. It'll be somebody who's got that spark. And the thing that throws into my mind immediately is the thought of, you know, someday I'm probably going to work for this person. I just always sort of chuckle and tell that to myself. And sometimes I tell them. So yeah, I can think of a couple handfuls of situations where we'll have entry-level software engineers, entry-level managers, folks that I've worked with in my career where I guess I can see it. I guess I have the fortune to be able to recognize that talent and to see where their creative energies are, where their technical diligence is, where their determination and drive, where the clarity of thought is good. And I've seen some of these people grow all the way up from new college grad or even intern up to director, senior director, VP. And the day's going to come that I'm going to work for them pretty quick. So I can see a bunch of those examples throughout my career. And that's just a really remarkable experience to watch.
Sometimes in Silicon Valley, we assign verb status to a product as a way of saying it's reached its pinnacle of success. Slack is there. What are some of the things now that you've been embedded in the Slack culture for a bit now that you'd say distinguish Slack, the development culture, and Slack, the product, from ones that just don't achieve that level of status?
Yeah, I think it's heart of hearts. What Slack got right is they really got right product market fit. It's a fancy way of saying they really listened to the customers. They really understood the customer perspective, and they built what people wanted. You know, before Slack came out, people didn't know they wanted a channel-based collaboration tool. You know, there was no one knocking on the door of VCs or no one knocking on Stewart and Calistore saying, hey, you know, it would be really cool if you built this channel-based collaboration tool. No, it wasn't there. They had to think about it. They had to work through that, synergize the answer, and then really listen to what people needed. So they ended up building a product that is exactly what people needed. And that's what achieves that amazing product market fit. So what Slack got right is an intense focus on understanding how people use the product, an intense focus on what people want to see in the product, and also just a passion around doing it in a way that is both scalable and performant. One of the amazing things about Slack, and I remember 5, 7, 10 years ago using Skype, and we used to have this verb where we would say there's Skype lag. So if you have multiple people on a Skype session, one person would type, and even if you're on the same table, you'd have this experience where somebody else might not get it for 5 seconds or 10 seconds or even a couple minutes sometimes. And sometimes you'd have these discussions, especially when you're in the heat of a conversation, like, oh, I'm having Skype lag. What Slack did amazingly right is that immediacy of message send, that immediacy of reactions and channel, that all clients, whether you're sitting around the same table or whether you're sitting around different parts of the world, feel that. There's a way that the product was architected, there's a way that the technology is deployed that gives that immediacy, that sense of being connected, that presence that I think really is special on Slack. And I think that when you take a step back and look at it, that's what people feel. We're in Slack. We're all part of a team. We're all working together. We all can chat at the same time. We all have that same experience at the same time. The information that's in the channel is common and can be digested by everyone at the same time. And I think that's what they really got right. Listening to the customer, understanding what the customer wanted, understanding where people were going, and then implementing a technology solution that's just spectacular.
Are there specific processes that Slack does differently? I mean, that maniacal focus on the user, how does it manifest itself in the culture?
Yeah, I think it manifests itself by some of the user research we do. We do a lot of user research. It also manifests itself in the way that engineering thinks about using the product. We use Slack a lot, obviously, but we also realize that we're not the typical Slack user. We use Slack for a number of different things, whether it is our development process, whether it's code check-ins, whether it's code review, whether it's incident management, whether it's deployments. So on the engineering side, we're heavy into Slack integrations and how we build Slack on Slack. We understand a lot of our customers don't necessarily use it that way, I might say yet. But I think that understanding sort of the full scope of what people do within Slack and being able to think about how the product could adapt to all those different use cases is something that we both spend a lot of time doing, but that we have an instinct and we have the right leaders and we have the right people that know how to get us to the right decision quickly. The other thing I'd say is that our CEO, you mentioned Stuart, he is a passionate user of Slack and a passionate criticizer of Slack. And I think that's amazing, because having a leader of the company who dives into the details, who really wants to drive the experience for the customer, is something that just oozes from the top down all the way through the org.
Beautiful. Makes sense. As a user and a lover of the product, you can see the passion, you know, in every new feature.
We appreciate that. There's a lot of people who love Slack. There's a lot of people who recognize what we do seems easy, but at the same time, there's a lot of thought and also a lot of thinking about how do we scale it that goes into the product all the time.
A lot of wisdom in that statement. So you've been a part of so many of the most impactful technology trends, going back to, you know, from mainframe to client server to desktop computing, internet, mobile, cloud, AI. Be a prognosticator for us. We've seen a lot. Look ahead at the next, call it, decade. What are the next set of things that we'll append to that list?
I think the word I would use would be autonomy and automation. So if you think about where we all thought we were going to be by 2020, autonomous vehicles, you know, bots solving all the world's problems on their own sort of thing. I think that belief that people were thinking about was probably a decade too early, maybe more. So if I was to put one word in there, you know, we think about mobile, we think about cloud, we think about AI. I think the next one is autonomy. And by autonomy, I mean autonomous vehicles, autonomous decision-making amongst teams, autonomous workflows that are running to drive the business faster, to do the analysis, to do the financial calculations, to do the incident reviews, if you want to pick on that particular thing. I think we're going to see a lot more software making decisions on behalf of people. And I think that's good, because when you have people involved, you have gray matter involved. And when you have gray matter involved, you're going to make mistakes. If you can automate that, and you can automate that in a way that drives better decisions for the business, I think it'll allow us to move faster and also have more time to do what humans do well. That is, be creative, be transparent, be communicative, keep people aligned, while the software itself is helping make those decisions in an autonomous way.
Something's become a cliche, the statement, never let a good crisis go to waste. So if you're giving advice to leaders who are thinking about, you know, how we'll, quote, build back better, what are some things you'd recommend leaders focus on?
I think that one way to build back better, one way to sort of come out of this stronger, is by having the right discipline across leadership in the company. Leaders have this opportunity to open the door a little bit into what they're like. Leaders have the ability to be more empathetic to folks that are suffering. You know, there are people that, you know, aren't quite coping with isolation as well as others. There are people who have to be caregivers for parents or children. There are people that are dealing with things in their family situations because of what the globe is going through. And what's amazing to me is when you take a step back and you think about, we've been sitting here on January 1st, and if I had said, you know, in a couple of months, we're all going to be self-isolating, not just the U.S., but the whole globe at once, we would have, you know, wondered, you know, maybe perhaps what we were smoking or what we were thinking. So because we've all come here so quickly, because we've been forced into that change, because we've all had experienced that change in a way that is quick and defining for our time, I think that leaders need to be empathetic to that, and they need to learn about the soft skills. You know, the role of the manager as a true coach, instead of being someone who's just a task driver, is going to be sort of the norm. And I think especially as a larger percentage of these managerial tasks, I was just talking about, get automated. Those software makes those automated decisions. They file the expense reports, they do the time cards, they acknowledge approvals, all these sort of things that are the busy work of managing. It allows you to sort of take the rest of that time and to think about being a leader, being someone who empowers the team to actually do things going forward. So one way to think about how to build back better is by empowering the team, by focusing on the team, and being able to lead by example. One of the things that I'm doing, for example, is I'm not sending messages to my team, even over Slack, over the weekends. I'm encouraging Friday at 5 to Monday at 9. I'm not sending messages. Doesn't mean I won't queue them up for going out at 9:01, but I'm trying to give people a chance to take that mental break, give them a chance to think about how, you know, given the time we're in, they can execute in a way that's most effective for them. So the way we build back better is by becoming better managers, by becoming better leaders, and by also being empowering our teams to think about how they can execute best for them going forward.
Hope a lot of leaders and future leaders out there hear that and heed that. Good advice. So in light of that, what's a workplace behavior that you think will be commonplace, let's say even in 5 years, that today seems bizarre or silly?
I wonder if what we're going to see is that physical offices are no longer the backbone of how teams get work done. So the project room, the team pod, the water cooler all move online. You know, we really see Slack channels as the places where those conversations, decisions, and content come together. So I think, you know, if you think about what's going to be happening over the next few years, what's going to be the digital backbone that's going to be replacing the office? We might find out everyone goes back to work and we all go back to our offices, but I feel a little bit like the cat's out of the bag on that one. And we all need to think about what's the new digital workplace, what's the new digital backbone, what's the best breed of applications that we're using to replace that world. And I think that's going to be something that we all have to think about over the next 3 to 5 years.
So you and I both have young kids. Yours are a little older than mine, but you know, we think about the world of work that they're going to graduate into. What do you think is going to be different about the world of work that they enter versus the one that we entered?
I think that, you know, if I look at the world that my daughters will enter into, I think it is going to be a world of work that has far more flexibility for them in terms of both location and time. I think it's going to be something where, again, I think the soft skills will matter because we might not be all in the same room or might not be all around the same team pod or the same room. Understanding how to communicate, understanding how to write, understanding how to emphasize what you need to emphasize in tone. I think it's going to be the soft skills. I think it's going to be the soft skills of both the individuals and the managers that will really allow people to rise and shine. It's funny, even in this world that we're in right now, you know when someone's holding a room, even if we're not in the same room. You also know when someone's distracted. So I think being able to have those soft skills and recognize how to leverage them to move your career forward, get your project done, finish up your tasks, do the right work-life balance is going to be something that we're all going to enter into over the next, you know, decade or two. It's going to be an interesting time because the tools are one thing, the Slacks, the Zooms, you know, the other tools that people are using to collaborate are one thing, but it's the humans using the tools and being able to get done what they want to get done that's going to be taking it to the next level.
I think we got time for one last question, but I got to get this one in. Alan, your advice to a younger version of yourself?
Well, exercise more, sleep more. I think the other thing I would say is I should learn how to delegate more effectively, learn how to hire great people. And once I hire them, make sure that they bond with their peers and just get out of their way. If you're doing a great job hiring, if you're doing a great job building team cohesion and delegating to them, then you should just get out of their way as a leader. I also think the advice I'd give to myself is stay in tune with the technology where you have a passion and don't try to learn it all. I think a lot of us try and learn everything and be deep everywhere, but that's incredibly hard, except for the incredibly rare of us. It's okay to be a subject matter expert if you want to be a great leader, as long as you stay curious and as long as you continue to learn. So if I was to sum it up to a younger Alan, I would say hire great, delegate great, keep learning where you have a passion, and it's okay not to know it all.
Beautiful, beautiful. We're out of time, but I know it feels like we're just getting started. Maybe in a few quarters from now, as the world keeps changing, maybe you'll come back and we'll revisit some of the trends that we thought would occur. How do you feel about that?
That'd be fun. Let's see if we're right. I'm rarely right, but who knows? Maybe I'll get lucky this time.
Good stuff. Well, this was excellent. Thanks again, Alan. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. Again, if you like what you're hearing, go to peoplerain.io/podcast. Subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get additional insights and things that ended up getting left on the cutting room floor. We're back next week with another fascinating discussion with a leader talking about the future of work. Thank you very much.